तो सुन रहे हो CGSF 90.1 FM, जो कि बर्नबी ब्रिटिश कोलंबिया में स्थित है.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
From the Netherlands, this is the Green Planet Monitor. Voices and stories from a warm, wet planet. Today, the Day of Two Suns. 70 years ago, the U.S. began testing high-yield hydrogen bombs at Bikini Atoll in the middle of the Pacific. Its biggest bomb, Bravo.
The Bravo test was so large, the energy of it literally vacuumed in everything around it that it could. It was taking in coral, was taking in sand and ocean and water and palm trees and pulverizing it and mixing it in the stem with all the radioactive materials.
The 15-megaton Bravo shot spewed radioactive fallout on thousands of Marshallese. Little Rongelap Atoll suffered the worst.
The hydrogen bomb was so big, it spewed radioactive fallout across thousands and thousands of square miles of atolls and islands in the Marshall Islands. On Rongelap, what they got was a heavy, heavy dose of the fallout. People describe it as a snowstorm.
70 years later, the people of Rongelap and Bikini have yet to go home.
Sometimes we think they forgot what they do. I see they still try to get the radiation out from Bikini. I don't see any different. I don't see any changes. If I see people coming back, start live on Bikini, that's what I'm going to see. Now Bikini is good.
This is the Green Planet Monitor. I'm David Kattenberg. Help us deliver this weekly package of Earth news. Subscribe and or donate at greenplanetmonitor.net. This past Friday, March 1st, marked the 70th anniversary of the Bravo shot, the first in a series of high-yield U.S. thermonuclear tests in the Marshall Islands, just north of the equator in the Central Pacific. The Pentagon carried out 67 nuclear tests in the Marshalls, 44 at Eniwetok Atoll at the northern end of the chain, and 23 at Bikini Atoll. Castle Bravo was the biggest, and a big experiment, a fission fusion device fueled by lithium deuteride, designed by Edward Teller and Stanislaw Ulam. Rated at 6 megatons, Bravo yielded 15. Thrilling news for nuclear scientists and the American military, bad news for the Marshallese people. Just north of Bikini, fallout rained down on the people of Rongelap and Utterick Atolls. Finer particulate fallout drifted up and down the Marshalls and around the world through the stratosphere. I visited the Marshalls on the 50th anniversary of Bravo back in 2004, then again in 2007. Here are some voices from those trips. In order of appearance, American nuclear researcher Holly Barker, Rongelap residents Elio Boaz and Lamayo Abon, Canadian nuclear health activist Rosalie Bertel, the former chair of the Nuclear Claims Tribunal, Jim Plasman, the tribunal's public defender, Bill Graham, and Rongelap Senator Abaca Ann Jane Madison.
The Bravo test was so large, the energy of it literally vacuumed in everything around it that it could. It was taking in coral, was taking in sand and ocean and water and palm trees and pulverizing it and mixing it in the stem with all the radioactive materials.
Yeah, I see the blast. Yeah, mushroom cloud and like it's a red, color red. I don't know, it was really scary. But I didn't even know it was dangerous.
Radioactive fallout from the Bravo test fell to the ground like a white powdery substance. They had heard stories about snow before and assumed that it was snow. Children went out and picked it up and gathered it. They tasted it.
Something like powder fell on our hair, on our skin, even our foot. But we went and ate because we didn't know what was going on.
This was a shocking experience for the Marshallese after the weapon testing. It's like a big tumor filled with blood, which grows in the uterus of the woman. It's a pretty horrible experience for a woman who thinks she's pregnant and carries this tumor in place of a baby. and then gives birth to the tumor. I talked to one woman, and she said she held her baby until it died, and then she buried it so her husband wouldn't see it.
That radioactive cesium is taken up by the plants and is present in the food chain. Well, this is a significant problem, because if people were to exist on a local foods-only diet, their exposure levels would exceed the U.S. EPA standards.
Everybody in these communities has had family members die of cancer. Uterine cancers, bone cancers, lung cancers, skin cancers, stomach cancers.
This was in the open literature in 1958. This group of people provides a most valuable source of data, how radiation moves from the soil through the food chain and into human beings. Wow. It feels like maybe there was some experimentation going on here. The Marshallese were used to provide that knowledge, and they are entitled to compensation for the risks and the damages that they suffered.
The other islets, they go out there to gather food, and those little islets are as important as the main island. It's Ronglabis, and so they're not only talking about clean up the main island. All the islands in Rongelap Atoll to be cleaned up. Right now, the northern part of Rongelap is red hot.
Red hot?
Red hot.
People are beginning to believe, I think, now that failure to provide the funding equates to telling people they're not entitled to the same level of radiation protection as an American citizen is. Ultimately, I think that the U.S. will make the... They must do the right thing.
These funds are manifestly inadequate. Not only do we not have enough money, the tribunal in the near future, absent any additional funding, will be forced to close, and those unfunded awards will remain unfunded.
Yes, it probably be safe. That's what I want. I want to go home. But it's not clean.
I really always like to go back to my home island. I miss Rongelap. But the problem is, they said the northern part of the island, you cannot go there because it's too contaminated. You cannot go there.
Now, the U.S. government achieved superpower status as a result of this testing, but it was at the expense of the Marshallese people's health and homelands and culture. And so the Marshall Islands government sees this as an opportunity to remember what sacrifices the Marshallese people have made, but also to ask the U.S. government to take adequate responsibility for the damages and injuries it's caused in the Marshall Islands.
In order of appearance, you heard American nuclear researcher Holly Barker, Rongelap residents Elio Boaz and Lamayo Abon, Canadian nuclear health activist Rosalie Bertel, now deceased, Jim Plasman, the former chair of the Marshall Islands' Nuclear Claims Tribunal, the tribunal's public defender Bill Graham, and Rongelap Senator Abaca Anjane Madison. The history of U.S. nuclear weapons testing in the Marshall Islands, its impacts, and U.S. compensation are complicated, although U.S. government and other independent studies show that all of the Marshalls were exposed to fallout. U.S. compensation has always been limited to the residents of four Marshallese atolls out of hundreds. Those include Rongelap and Utterick. Under the terms of the first Compact of Free Association between the U.S. and the Marshall Islands, the U.S. provided $150 million to the Marshalls in full and final compensation for its weapons tests. The Marshall Islands' Nuclear Claims Tribunal adjudicated over $2 billion. The tribunal folded in 2011. On the 70th anniversary of the Bravo shot, I spoke with Giff Johnson, longtime resident of the Marshall Islands and the editor of the Marshall Islands Journal. I reached Giff Johnson in Majuro, the capital atoll of the Marshalls. Tell me about the Bravo blast, March 1st, 1954, 70 years ago. It took place at Bikini, but it really impacted a little Rongelap. Tell me about that.
So the backdrop to the Bravo test is that in 1953, the Russians had tested a deliverable hydrogen bomb, and the United States did not have a deliverable hydrogen bomb. And so it set about to show the Russians that the United States had it, and essentially to catch up to the Russians. And so the Bravo test was the first in a series of half a dozen huge hydrogen bomb tests at Bikini. And the interesting thing about it is that, you know, weather conditions were known. The U.S. had weathermen stationed on an atoll very close to Rongelap, and they were giving them hourly updates that told the people pushing the button that the winds were blowing towards inhabited islands, but that didn't matter. So March 1, the bomb went off sometime after 6 a.m., and that's why some Marshallese say it was the day of two suns, because the sun had risen already. And then the sun had risen in the east, and then the sun rose in the west at Bikini. And the hydrogen bomb was so big. I mean, it created this vast fireball. And subsequently, as the fireball went up, it spewed radioactive fallout across thousands and thousands of square miles of atolls and islands in the Marshall Islands. Contaminated the American weathermen who were on Rongerik Atoll. It contaminated or exposed the Rongelap people who were on two different atolls, Rongelap and Ilinganai, and it exposed many, many other Marshallese, although at the time, the U.S. decided only to evacuate two populations, the Rongelap people and the Utarik people, and just ignore the hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of Marshallese who were exposed, but not to the extent that the Rongelap people were exposed. And Rongelap exposure, they were about 100 miles away from Bravo. And on Rongelap, what they got was a heavy, heavy dose of the fallout. It looked like people describe it as a snowstorm of all this sand and, you know, all the debris that was lifted up by this huge hydrogen bomb test up into the sky and then blew across the islands. And because people had had no warning, they knew nothing about it, and so they were just in it, right? And kids were playing in this stuff that was just coming out of the sky, and it was falling in the water catchment tanks and on their food. Meanwhile, you have to appreciate that the Americans at Rongerik had been instructed, stay inside, close the windows, just don't come outside, because they knew, the testers knew, that everybody in the fallout path was going to get blasted. And it's one of the interesting things is to appreciate that in Rongelap Atoll is about 60 little islands connected by coral reef and more or less circular. Well, the Rongelap people lived in the southern island. If they had been living in the north of Rongelap, they would be dead, because the fallout was so intense in the northern islands coming across that it was a lethal dose. It was over 1,000 rads of radiation. But just 30 miles south, where the Rongelap people were, it ended up being about a half a lethal dose. So they got really sick. They had skin burns, vomiting, their hair fell out. I mean, it was very much like the experience that people in Hiroshima and Nagasaki had with the radiation poisoning from those bombs.
Were there any immediate deaths?
So, and I forgot to mention also that there was one Japanese fishing boat, which is quite famous today, called the Lucky Dragon, that was contaminated very heavily because it was very close to Bikini on March 1, 1954. But there were also hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Japanese longline fishing vessels all around the Marshall Islands, because this was there and continues today to be the fishing, really important fishing grounds for Japanese fishing vessels. So hundreds and hundreds of fishing boats also were exposed to the fallout and had to have all of their tuna confiscated and destroyed when they returned to Japan. And that's a whole nother element of the Bravo test.
And some of those fishermen died, did they not?
Yeah, but there weren't any, like, people didn't die in the few weeks afterwards. I think one of the lucky dragon fishermen from Japan, my memory fails on this, but it was like within a couple of years, maybe a year or two. I mean, these folks got really sick because they experienced a very high dose of radiation. And, you know, the Rongelap people were left on their island for 2 days before they were evacuated. So that increased the dose. The Utrik people were evacuated 3 days later. Now, the really important thing to understand is that the United States government had a playbook already in position that governed how they were going to manage a catastrophe like the Bravo test. And this came, some of it came from the playbook that they used in Japan when the U.S. occupied Japan after the war in 1945 and covered up and wouldn't allow reporting about the radiation health effects in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And they issued disinformation and misinformation. Well, this is what the Atomic Energy Commission did, like almost from day one in the Marshall Islands. And because nobody could come into the Marshall Islands, it was a U.S. administered area, so nobody could really come in and check anything. So the U.S. just said, oh, the natives are all fine. They've been evacuated as a precaution. And it was a lie. They were really sick. They were, you know, they had been harmed very seriously. But that cover-up began on day one and continues to this day, 70 years later. And the things that were set in motion in 1954, which essentially was the creation of this myth by the United States that only four atolls in the Marshall Islands were exposed. That is Bikini and Eniwetok, the two ground zero test sites, and then Rongelap and Utrik as the downwind fallout exposed islands. Yet subsequent, many years later, secret classified U.S. government studies were declassified. And so finally in the 1990s, we got confirmation of what Marshallese knew because of health problems that they'd been experiencing, that many, many more atolls and islands were exposed to the Bravo test, and not only Bravo, but other hydrogen bombs that were tested here. So the problem with all of this is that the U.S. has dealt with a piece of the nuclear legacy, right? It has compensated the four atolls. It's providing medical care for them. But the nuclear legacy is much bigger. And the U.S. government to this day refuses to deal with all the ramifications that the Bravo test and its other hydrogen bombs caused in the Marshall Islands.
Now, I want to ask you whether or not what your assessment is of charges that U.S. Military personnel kind of, you know, intentionally left these folks on their atolls. I mean, in the beginning, it was obviously, a mishap. They had misapprehended what was going to happen. Then when they realized what had happened, there were people in the military were thinking this is going to be a great experiment. And I remember Bill Graham from the Nuclear Claims Tribunal back in, 2004 or 2007 when I met him, read me this this famous quote from somebody saying, I'm paraphrasing, this will be a great opportunity to do some experimentation to see what the impact is on people who've been directly exposed, people who have been a little less exposed. What's your assessment of that?
So the fact is, like, there's a lot of Marshall Islanders who believe they were intentionally exposed to Bravo, and there's plenty of circumstantial evidence that supports that contention, because the U.S. government knew that the winds were blowing towards these inhabited islands, but tested anyway, and there's other things involved in it. For my view is the U.S. government, the most important thing about the Bravo test was to show the Russians that the Americans had the hydrogen bomb. And that was the overriding driver of that series of hydrogen bomb tests. And essentially, they had set March 1 as the date, and it was kind of come hell or high water, they were going to push the button because it was the Russians that they were competing with. And public health was not a consideration. And you can see it. They exposed their own people, Americans as well as Marshallese, Japanese fishermen, everybody. But once the exposure happened, then it became an opportunity for study. And it's significant that the military has a contingency for everything, of course, right? And so in the contingency playbook for the Bravo and the Operation Castle series was Project 4.1. And Project 4.1 was the study of people exposed to radioactive fallout. That's more or less the title. And it was part, it was in the manual, right? Like before the testing, because the Army or the Navy makes contingency plans for everything. What if people get exposed? So they had a plan. And the plan was you immediately bring in a team of doctors and you begin medical care and studies on the people who were exposed. And this is what happened. So they flew in U.S. doctors from American laboratories. And within a year, Brookhaven National Laboratory, which is a then Atomic Energy Commission, today Department of Energy laboratory, that laboratory was in charge of the ongoing studies of the Rongelap and Utrecht people. And so they continued to study this high-level exposed group and the low-level exposed group, right, as comparison.
And the people of Rongelap were the high exposure group and the people of Utrecht were the low exposure.
That's right. And the Utrecht people actually had a fairly significant exposure. It wasn't small, but they were told for years by the U.S. doctors, don't worry, you know, this isn't a really bad exposure. But it was 22 years later, 1976, that a whole bunch of thyroid cancers began showing up among the Utrecht people, the lower exposed folks, at a rate that was actually higher than in the Rongelap community, which was just blasted by Bravo fallout. So there were a lot of like speculation about why that was, but this important thing is the U.S. doctors, it had a very closed mind and view about what was going to happen. And the fact that they would tell islanders when they didn't know, the U.S. scientists and doctors did not know what the results of this fallout would be, but they kept telling them, don't worry, you're fine. It just indicates what their mindset was. And so in the early years after Bravo, like there were a fair number of miscarriages and stillbirths among the Rongelap people, but they were just dismissed as statistically insignificant because these are tiny populations, right? The originally exposed Rongelap population was 82 people, including 4 pregnant women. So you could say 86, right? Because they had their babies and it was 86 people who were exposed to Bravo. So it's a very small population, but there were these signs that certain health things were manifesting, but the Atomic Energy Commission doctors said, they just didn't look at it. So that's one element of the nuclear legacy. Another element is allowing these populations to move back to seriously radiation-contaminated environments so that people who should never have had any radiation exposure after the Bravo test were exposed day in and day out to more radioactivity. And people who weren't on Rongelap during Bravo in March 1, 1954, were able to move back 3 years later, and they became exposed people by virtue of eating the contaminated coconuts, breadfruit, pandanus, coconut crabs, all of which, concentrate radioactivity, and people are eating it. So they became exposed.
So they moved the people of Rongelap, was repopulated again, and then they realized, oh my God, this is a disaster. So they evacuated Rongelap once again.
No, that's like way down the track, because the U.S. took them away for 3 years, and in 1957 just said, all right, you can go back. They rebuilt the village. They did no radiological cleanup. And there's a quote in one of the Brookhaven National Laboratory studies in 1957 or 1958 when people moved back, and the doctors said, Rongelap Island is one of the most contaminated locations in the world. The habitation of these people on the island will afford most valuable radiation, valuable ecological radiation data on human beings. I mean, it's in black and white. And this is the way the doctors looked at these studies. I mean, in theory, it was supposed to be healthcare, but it was a study.
So they moved them back in 1958, but then they, 57, but then they evacuated them once again.
No. The Rongelap people lived there for the next 30 years. But they saw themselves so many health problems that in 1985, they decided to self-evacuate Rongelap and move to an island in Kwajalein Atoll, which is like 150 miles away, to get away from Rongelap and the radiation on it.
And what were those health impacts they started to see?
Well, this is like long term. You had like most of the population had thyroid tumors, many thyroid cancers, but like everybody had their thyroids taken out, all, you know, like 90% of the population. And this is like the Rongelap population is one of the reasons the world knows so much about radiation health effects, right? Because these folks were really studied by the United States doctors. So they had a lot of thyroid issues. There were cancers. A young man who was like a year old at the time of the Bravo, he died of leukemia in 1972. And it went on, and people were just like sickness, cancers, whatever they were seeing, they felt that it was a result of living on a contaminated island. So Greenpeace was coming out with their Rainbow Warrior on a Pacific tour, and I happened to be friends, very close friends, with the senator, the parliamentary representative of the Rongelap people, and also friendly with a lot of the Greenpeace folks. And so when I mentioned to the Rongelap leader that Greenpeace was coming out with a ship, he says, oh, maybe they can evacuate us. And I remember putting Jethang Anjine, the senator, with Greenpeace International head Steve Sawyer at the time in a room and talking about this. And the Rongelap senator goes, can you help us evacuate? And the Greenpeace guy, Steve, goes, you mean like a symbolic evacuation? You know, we take a group down and we do a big PR event, because that's what Greenpeace was good at, right? And still is very good at publicizing problems. And the Rongelap senator said, no, I don't want a symbolic evacuation. We want to leave, take our houses, dismantle everything, and move. And so Greenpeace was like, whoa, a totally different thing. But they agreed they could do it. And so in 1985, they made several trips back and forth between Rongelap and Kwajalein, delivered people, took apart all their houses and everything, building materials. And they set up a community on an island that had nothing on it. I mean, it was just like, it was a really hard thing to do. But they were scared about staying on Rongelap. And at the time, the U.S. Department of Energy, the Interior Department, everybody criticized the Rongelap people. Oh, you guys don't know what you're doing. There's no science to support evacuation. But what happened was, because they left, it put pressure on the U.S. government to address Rongelap's radiological condition. So the U.S. Congress put up some money for an independent study. And the Rongelot people got one of their scientists involved in it. And lo and behold, the Rongelot people who'd never been to college, didn't have any PhDs or physicists, turned out they were right. And there was plutonium contamination on the island. There were all kinds.